A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 28, 2000, entitled, Remember Me Where My Heart Dwells. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 84, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 35 through 58, and John 19, verses 38 through 42. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Memorial Day weekend, a weekend in which we remember those that we've loved and lost a while. It is a civil holiday, and along with Thanksgiving, perhaps the civil holiday that has the deepest spiritual significance. A time to honor those who paid the supreme sacrifice to preserve our liberty and to keep our freedoms alive. And then from that, the habit generally, the custom generally of remembering those who have gone before us. Of visiting cemeteries and adorning graves with flowers, a time to pause, a time to remember, a time to grieve, and a time to give thanks. I remember vividly my first visit to a military cemetery. It was in the spring of 1984 in a little Dutch village toward Arnhem. It was a British military cemetery, and I think the village was Oosterbaan. There's a war museum there. And then we walked across to the cemetery. As I said, it was spring, and the shrubs were absolutely splendid. And the cemetery was so obviously kept meticulously with great care. And I had never been struck before in the environment of a cemetery. But here I was deeply moved. I think for the first time existentially, to look across the field of crosses and Stars of David, the names of primarily young men, the dates of birth and the dates of death, indicating the brevity of life and the horrible cost of war and the price of preserving freedom and beating back the demonic darkness. It was a deeply moving experience. It was a spiritual experience. It was one of those moments along my pilgrimage way that I can remember that I really felt something very deep. In 95, Nancy and I led some pilgrims over to Europe, and they're outside Cambridge, England. There's an American military cemetery. Again, one simply cannot come upon that scene without being moved. A field of crosses or Stars of David in orderly rows. And name after name after name of the youth of the nation. A beautiful memorial wall, a striking chapel. And once again, I felt how we have honored our dead. There has been that tradition, and there have been those who have seen to it that those who paid that supreme sacrifice are not forgotten. And the very way in which it is all kept speaks of the dignity of the human spirit. Going to Normandy, 50 years after the invasion, standing on the beaches and looking at the cliffs, seemingly impossible to scale, set with concrete bunkers that seemed impenetrable, with our huge guns facing out to sea. And then moving up and to the American cemetery there, and one again feels a tremendous cost at which that battle was won that turned the tide of the war. Well, those experiences for me, I must admit, were the experiences that imprinted deeply upon my consciousness the importance of the dignified honoring of the dead and of having an appropriate place and setting in which to remember and to grieve and through memory to feel the connections once again and to let the love of those we've loved and lost well up within us. 84 was a significant year for me. It was a year of sabbatical. The first 6 months of that year, the first 3 months of which we spent in Schenectady, where I was the theologian in residence in this great old First Church in downtown Schenectady. And it was there that I was introduced for the first time to a columbarium. Within that grand old building, there was a room set aside, chapel-like, with a table and a candle and an open Bible, and one wall in which there were niches in which the urns of those whose cremains were being kept. A place, a sacred place, in which the people of the congregation could come and could sit and could meditate and pray and could remember and could experience again the connectedness with those they loved and lost. Well, in 84, I came back in the fall to take up the task here once again. And one of the things we did as a kind of exercise in renewal was to constitute 11 task forces on all aspects of our community life. One task force, at my instigation, was a task force to study the viability of creating our own columbarium. The conclusion of that task force at that time was not yet, not now. Might have had something to do with the fact that we included the local undertaker on the committee, I don't know. But columbariums involve cremation, and in 84, 16 years ago, that was not as common as it is now. It is becoming a more common phenomenon for various reasons. Reasons of space, ecology, economic considerations, or whatever. But in any case, I think that it's time for us once again to have that option open to those for whom that is an appealing place in which to remember their loved ones. I entitle this message, Remember Me Where My Heart Dwells, because it's very much my own personal perspective. Burial customs are a part of every culture. and every society. And there are those who say that burial customs are the last customs that a people will change. It's so primal. It's written so deeply into our past. In traditional communities, there are ways that this is done, which are simply taken for granted as though, well, that's just the way it is and the way it ought to be. I read that little snippet of the Gospel of John, the burial of Jesus. Whether the story was intended to be literal or symbolic is beside the point. I read it for that little phrase, according to the burial custom of the Jews. Because every people have had certain rituals of death, certain burial customs. And this is not a matter of some absolute truth. It's not a matter of right or wrong. It has everything to do with a personal perspective or with a personal inclination. And so, on this Memorial Day weekend, which is a Memorial Day that doesn't have to share place with Pentecost, which happens sometimes, or Baccalaureate, which happens other times, but rather is a weekend which stands alone, I thought it would be the right time for us simply to think together about one more option that is available to us as we deal with death and dying with dignity and with honor. There is, as I said, no right way to do this. When I began in the ministry, I used to conduct a funeral service with an open casket in the front, which I haven't seen for a long, long time. Those customs do gradually change. If we were an Episcopal congregation, the casket would be led in procession by the cross, with the clergy reciting resurrection texts. A very nice ritual, actually. We have in this congregation a funeral pall, which is a cloth, a vestment-type cloth that goes over the casket, which I don't know whether we've used yet, just because when it comes to that moment, we haven't gotten into that kind of rhythm. But it's a very, very good custom because it puts a sameness on every casket, whether it's mahogany or brass or a pinewood box. And a beautiful symbol, really, of our leveling before the face of God. Whatever the customs of a particular community may be, if they are done with dignity and meaning, and if they communicate that to those who are grieving, then they are good and they are right. But there is one word that I ought to address to this matter of cremation, because it is my impression that early on it may have been practiced by those who were intending to deny the resurrection of the body. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I'm sure that it was true that the church reacted to cremation, sensing perhaps that it was a denial of that. Well, Paul's chapter on the resurrection, 1 Corinthians 15, ought to dispel any problem with the matter of cremation. For in that rather involved and torturous discussion of the 15th chapter, this much is clear. Paul, arguing by analogy, says that while there is continuity, there is also discontinuity. And that which is buried is not that which comes to life again. And it doesn't make one bit of difference whether the corpse is laid in the ground or the ashes placed in an urn. According to Paul's argument, you don't put a plant in the ground and expect that plant to come back. A plant bears seed. The seed is buried. The seed disintegrates. The seed dies, and from it comes a new plant, which is resurrection. He talks about a spiritual body. But how can you have a spiritual body? He's stammering, of course, because he's talking about the things about which we really don't know. But what he was affirming was what he says, I think even better, in Romans 14, whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. So whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. And his resurrection, faith, and hope was based in his trust in God, who is the God of the living, the God who gives life, and to whom we go when our breath returns, to the one who gave it. So as far as the manner of dealing with the body, it is a matter of indifference, a matter of personal preference, a matter of choice. And I think we are seeing a movement more and more toward the practice of cremation. Why here? Why in the environment of the church? That year, 1984, once again, Nancy and I made a little journey northward to Friesland, to the North Sea seaport of Halward, from which my mother's family emigrated. And in those little villages in Friesland, in the Netherlands generally, in Europe generally, the skyline is punctuated by grand bell towers. And driving into the village, making one's way to that tower, one comes to the village church. And there, around the church, mantling it, the old churchyard, was the cemetery, which is the burial custom of Europe for years. And we made our way through the gilded fence. And there, almost immediately, I saw on the gravestones the names of my maternal grandparents, Van der Woude, posthumous. And it gave me a sense of connectedness. It made me realize how we are all bound together in the chain of the generations, bound together in the bundle of life, bound together in the communion of the saints. The old terminology was the church militant and the church triumphant. But as a matter of fact, all one. It is not at all unusual here in celebrations of baptism or marriage or in the solemnity of the funeral service to have three and sometimes even four generations present, rarely five, with deep rootedness in this family of faith, this concrete congregation, and with the mobility of people in our day. You may say, well, there is no longer such a thing as the village church, and yet I sense with our youth going out and having their children, more and more, they're coming back here in their family sanctuary for the baptism of their children. And again, the title of the message, please remember me where my heart dwells. This is where my heart dwells. This is where I've lived in community with you all these years. This is where my children have been baptized. This is where my children have been married, made their profession of faith, come back to have their children baptized. It's here that I have family, beyond my family. It is here that I have community, the bonds of love. And it seems to me that one of the finest, if the final, service that the church can offer is the environment for the remembrance of those we've loved and lost a while. I have some logistics to work out, and I know it will create some special circumstances, but I envision having the whole thing happen here. The visitation, the service of worship, the gathering following, and for those who choose it, the burial in the columbarium in the shadow of the chapel, where one can come at any time to remember, to weep, to laugh, and to give God thanks for life enriched by deep bonds of human relationship that death finally cannot break. So Joshua said to Israel on one occasion, "Choose you this day whom you'll serve, but as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." I would say to you, choose that which feels right for you, but as for me and my house, remember us where our heart dwells.